minutes. Lookies, really long list of movies. Ooh la la. Have I already said that before? I don't know. Holy smokes. I was not prepared to see this movie that we're going to be talking about today. What movie am I talking about? Well, I'll give you a few clues. It's a romance. It's a historical tragedy. It's a disaster. It's a $200 million movie. That's right, we're diving into this month's theme, cuffing season, with the top-selling epic romantic disaster film, Titanic.
All aboard!
If you dare. There is so much to talk about with this movie. There is so much to experience with this movie. There is so much to get angry at. And then, you know, and then there's all the behind the scenes, like, movie magic. Like, this movie, I still don't know if I hate it. I still don't know if I hate this movie. I think I hate it. I think I hate this movie. I haven't made my mind up yet, but it's kind of, you know, just the more I think about it, the more enraged I am. But before I get into the James Cameron of it all, let's go ahead and move on to my first take. Now, if it's your first time here, my first take is just my first take after watching the movie for the very first time. And, you know, I've been liking the real-time first take lucky situation, like lucky coming at you raw kind of thing. Like, so I'm gonna go ahead and play my first take right after I watched the movie. Yeah, I went from the couch to the mic and I was sweating the whole time. So here it is, my first take after watching the Titanic for the first time. Okay, so I just watched the Titanic for the first time successfully from beginning to end. And I am here to do my first take. Usually I write these out. I like journal them down and then I read them or just read them on the podcast. I decided to do this in real time. So I'm still sweaty from all the stress that movie put me under. I didn't realize it was going to be so stressful. It was so stressful. And it was 3 hours long, and it was longer than The Godfather, and it was more stressful than The Godfather. And it was like also, I think, a bit more gruesome than The Godfather. Not like all movies need to be compared to The Godfather, but I thought The Godfather was going to be the longest, gruesomest, most stressful movie of the entire season. Little did I know, it was the Titanic. So what did I think? Oh, the costumes were excuse me, my dress. I'm hiking it up because I am burning the fuck up. The costumes were beautiful. All of Rose's dresses were gorgeous. All of the dresses for the women were gorgeous. I also loved the men's outfits as well. Looked like everything fit so perfectly. I love trousers and suspenders and big billowy shirts. I would have worn everything that I saw on screen. The facial hair on the men was, like, exquisite. Oh, the sets were also incredible. The recreation of it all was incredible. Like, it looks like, of course, it looks like a shit ton of research went into this. Am I really ready for an entire month of romance movies? Because romances aren't easy. They're not easy to watch because, like, it's, oh my God, because there has to be some kind of conflict in the story for you to like it, right? For it to be, like, engaging. This movie was 3 hours long, and the first hour, you're, like, falling in love with Jack and Rose. And then the rest of the 2 hours is the ship going under. In the movie, they're like, oh, it's gonna go down in about 2 hours. And they do it in real time. And it is so grueling. It is so intense. And I think everyone deserves to be fucking enraged at the ending there. Don't put it on Rose, though. Don't blame all that shit on Rose. It wasn't Rose's fault. You saw them both try to get up there and it capsized. Come on. The Titanic taught us that we cannot trust movie tropes. Because not only did Jack die after he saved Rose and multiple people time and time again, women, children, old ladies, old men, groups of people breaking down, busting through gates, getting handcuffed, getting punched in the gut by a disgusting cop, and then, oh my And then fucking the whole axe thing, I will say, Rose getting the axe, not her. I would say Rose getting the axe and coming back to Jack. That might have been my favorite scene because I was like, that's just like really badass, you know? And sorry, my mind just went blank because I'm just remembering all of the stress that I was under while watching that movie. Oh my God, the music, the guys playing the music while the boat was going under. God, Jesus Christ. Is this movie also a commentary on capitalism and customer service and class systems? Which I know there are still class systems on cruise ships, and it gets dramatic and weird. I might look into that, depending on where the research goes for the Titanic. I thought when I was researching The Godfather, I thought I was going to do a lot of research on the actual mob. And instead, I found out Marlon Brando, you know? So it's like, so I don't know what the fuck is going to go on with research for this one. Also, I know that there is like a little bit of a scandal that we all just kind of learned about within the last few years, that someone like spiked some kind of food and the entire cast went tripping, which is not cool, not cool, not cool. But it's wild, and I hope everyone survived and made it out okay. The Titanic, I'm not watching this movie again. I can't believe I'm saying that, because usually I'm like, okay, I'm ready to watch it again after doing research and this. That was too much. Oh God, it was too much. It was so much stress. And honestly, I think I have PCOS and I just can't be stressed out like that. I didn't even have time to take my supplements because I was too busy biting my nails down to the nub, to the quick. I'm like almost mad that I'm this angry because I thought I knew what I was walking into. I thought I knew what I was walking into. Wrong. Okay, this is long enough for a first take. Next time you'll hear my beautiful angelic voice, I will have done research. And I will be very surprised if I watch this movie again. I will be fucking surprised if I watch this movie again. Maybe I'll watch it again in like 10 years. I don't know when I'll ever be in the mood for that. But yeah, okay. I'll see you, sweet angelic babies. Probably what, in like, after I edit this, in like a millisecond? Okay, see you in a second. Okay, so, okay, it's me. Hi, it's me. It's Lucky. This is no longer my first take. I have done my research. This is like a whole nother day now. I am out of that period dress. My hair is disgusting and I'm not wearing makeup. So this is like a whole nother day. Also, I will say about my first take, I found it kind of, I thought it was funny that I was like, I didn't know it'd be so stressful, even though I knew the Titanic was a tragedy. Like the, not the movie, but like the actual historical event was like a tragedy and actually one of my worst fears. So I don't know why I didn't anticipate being stressed watching a movie about one of my worst fears. I am terrified of cruise ships. I'm terrified of going on cruises. You will never catch me on a cruise ship. I've been invited to go on cruises by very lovely, awesome people. And I've had to be like, no, sorry. I'm a little scaredy cat. But no, for real. An entire city on a ship? Something doesn't seem right to me. And yeah, and like, what if the fucking thing goes down? What are you gonna do? Gosh, it's, I don't know. Being on a cruise ship, dying at sea, drown, that's just not my jam. You know what I'm saying? I'm not into it. I can't get over this fear. And I don't feel like I have to. Back to the story. So the story is very simple. You know, let me just sum it up real quick. So Jack, he's a poor artistic guy from the Midwest. He falls in love and steals the heart of Rose, a rich Philadelphian girl who is in some kind of arranged engagement with this like wealthy worm, you know. And this love story takes place on the Titanic, one of the biggest shipwrecks in history, right? So going into this, I knew Jack was going to die. I knew that. And I knew that Rose was going to live. I knew people were upset about the whole door situation. And of course, I knew about the demise of the actual Titanic, like I said before, right? I did not know Okay. I did not know that this movie was so full of carnage and stress. I also found it funny that the first hour of the movie was indeed the love story of Jack and Rose. And then everyone else on the ship is just talking about how unsinkable the ship is. Like, it was literally like this.
Say, did you know that the Titanic is the unsinkable ship?
Of course I knew. I'm the builder and designer of the Titanic. I made it unsinkable.
Did someone say unsinkable?
Why, yes, madam. This is the ship's designer. He made this Titanic unsinkable. That's very true. I'm the maritime mastermind behind the unsinkable ship.
Are y'all not superstitious in 1912? I don't think y'all would be talking so much about how this is like an unsinkable ship and not a person knocked on wood. And there was so much wood around that 1912 cruise ship. So yeah, everyone's talking about how the ship is unsinkable. And then you just do a hard cut to that scene with Victor Garber, who plays the ship's designer, Thomas Andrews. And he's just like staring at the broken clock in the first class smoking chambers as it fills up with ice water from the Atlantic. And the camera's like at a tilt. Or maybe the entire set is probably at a tilt because, you know, the Titanic is sinking. And as far as the romance in this movie goes, I'll say it was delightful. I thought Jack was charming and heroic, and that Rose was breaking loose from marital chains and enjoying her youth and getting her life back. And I thought it was fun to see them come together and fall in love very quickly. I loved it. And of course, like, I gave a little woo-hoo when they got a little sloppy in the back of a jalopy. You know what I mean? A steamy handprint on the window. God, ew. Okay, so the opening of the movie had real footage from the wreck. And y'all, I have yet another irrational fear and phobia that I can't truly explain. Like, yes, of course, I'm afraid to go on cruise ships. But also, I hate deep sea or underwater footage. I hate it. It makes my stomach literally flinch. The actual organ moves in my meat sack when I see footage that I, you know, like, I don't know. It's just like, it's too like Davy Jones Locker for me. It's too dark. It's too stoic. It's too spooky. I just know personally as a human that we are not supposed to be down there, you know? And while we are on the topic of my aquatic phobias, I'm also afraid of whales for this reason, too. Whales kind of creep me out. I, you know, save the whales for sure. I don't hate them. They're not my enemy. But like, whales freak me out. I don't think I would ever really want to see one in person. I might have been like Pinocchio in a past life. I don't know. And not to mention that the whales and the ocean repeatedly tell us to stay away. I'm just saying, the killer whales that are out there sinking yachts, you know, doing the Lord's work, to be honest, but also sending a fucking signal. They're sending a message. They're like, get out of here. Stop. God. Ooh. And do y'all remember the Titan? The Titan of 2023. Do you remember that? It's the submersible that had a bunch of billionaires on it and then it imploded as it was going to the Titanic wreck. That happened the same year. Like all the whales were like sinking the yachts and like the Titan. That's a whole nother spiral for a whole nother day. And I will start crying over the deaths of billionaires when they start crying over the deaths of like literally everyone else they're killing. Anyway, but speaking of the Titan, I wasn't expecting that to be the opener for this movie. It wasn't the Titan, you know, itself. It was like another submersible. I was kind of hoping that it would all take place in 1912. Like we would just like come out the gates 1912. But no. We had creepy shipwreck footage from the 90s, which was expensive as fuck. Let's get into it. Okay, so now we're going to get into James Cameron. James Cameron is the director of the Terminator, the Avatar movies, not the Airbender ones, and of course, the Titanic. Not only did he direct the Titanic, which was a massive feet with over 200 extras, a full-scale hydraulic replica of the Titanic, and multiple stages that were submerged and flooded, he wrote the damn thing while listening to Enya. Sail away, sail away, sail away, Enya is a vibe. And the Titanic does give big Enya energy, just saying. Oh, and by the way, he also drew the famous paint me like you're one of your French girls, Jack. Like he's the one who drew that picture. Kate Winslet actually posed for that picture too. So she posed and he drew her. Kate was wearing a bathing suit and she doesn't seem at all disturbed by that fact or that memory. Not saying she should be, but it's nice to know she is okay with it, you know? Oh, and that was Leo and Kate's first scene together. The nude painting scene. And they were adults in real life. Kate was 22 and Leo was 21. Still young as fuck, but they're not teens. So these were like all Holly weird questions I had while I was like looking through all of this. I was like, were they children? They were young adults. They were very, very young adults. But don't think Uncle Jim Cameron was so chill. He really wasn't. He actually has a reputation of being a perfectionist dick director. A lot of yelling, a lot of retakes. And please keep in mind that his movies are action-packed and the Titanic was part disaster film and all that jazz. I kind of think the executives are a bit afraid of Maestro Cameron because the movie cost $200 million and was pitched as, quote, Romeo and Juliet, but on the Titanic, end quote. And if we have learned anything about these fat cat movie execs, is that they stay rich by not spending a dime and undercutting pay and cutting corners. $200 million? The executives even asked that the time of the movie be cut down a bit to ensure viewers wouldn't be intimidated by a long runtime. Like, they weren't even trying to be like, hey, Cameron, we're gonna just, like, pull back a little bit on the money. No, they already paid for everything. They're just like, can we cut it down a little bit from 3 hours? Because people are going to be a little intimidated to sit down and watch a 3-hour movie. And James Cameron is reported to have thrown a fucking fit. And he said something to the likes of, you want to cut my movie? You'll have to fire me. You want to fire me? You'll have to kill me. What? And the executives were like, all right, dude. Whoa, geez, Jesus Christ. Shit. Wow. Woo. We'll keep it at 3 hours. And apparently, Cameron got his reputation of the scariest man in Hollywood from the set of Titanic. Oh, and another alleged quote that made me scoff was when Cameron was apparently yelling at the staff and crew by saying, God damn it, that's exactly what I didn't want! Kate Winslet stated that James Cameron had a temper that you wouldn't believe, and due to the extreme challenges on set as an actor, I don't know, like yelling from the director, the multiple takes, and the disaster scenario of the movie's plot that called for a gigantic sinking vessel into icy waters, Winslet said that she would not work with James Cameron again, unless the money was right. God, and these quotes from James Cameron are so dramatic. If you wanna fire me, you'll have to kill me. God damn it, that's exactly what I didn't want. Yeah! And just like the siren baby cry after that last one fits in perfectly. The crew even said that Jim had an evil alter ego that they nicknamed Midge, spelled M-I-J, which is Jim spelled backwards. And James Cameron still gets work. And he is still respected by many, regardless of the dramatics, or even because of the dramatics. They defend the dramatics. Of course, this makes me think of all the women in Hollywood standing up for themselves against the James Camerons of the industry. And then the industry and the normal schmormal public, they like will start ridiculing and they'll blacklist these women's, these women to extremes. And they're usually successful at doing so. And of course, the women are the ones that hold the title of being overly emotional, divas, hard to work with. Just please remember that anger is a feeling. It's an emotion. James! Anyway, James Cameron reminds me a lot of doctors I used to work for. Annoying. But even though I find his anger outbursts annoying, immature, and fragile, he really does bring on the movie magic, doesn't he? The behind-the-scenes details from this movie are spectacular. Of course, there is a lot of special effects, which also almost made Leo pass up on the project because it made the movie seem too commercial. But there is also a lot of crazy practical effects. like the back half of this monster ship being on hydraulics. I learned that James Cameron's dad was an engineer, and Jim spent a lot of his time building things for fun when he was a kid. And that was interesting to me because I'm going to be real. My dad loved to build stuff. He built our barn and fencing along with a lit riding ring. If you know, you know. It's a lot of fucking work. On sheetrock, bitch? What? But, you know, watching him build and create and be so creative about it, like, made me the same way. Like, if I need a prop, I'm going to make it before I think about, you know, looking for something to buy. Like, I'm going to see if I can make it first before I go buy it. And making it might be more expensive than buying it. Like, if I need a costume to look a certain way, I'm going to design it and execute it. If I need to engineer pasties that can twirl and serve liquid shots, I will. And I have. I have a few little videos on my IG if you're interested in seeing my pasties that can serve shots. Anyway, but it is interesting to learn about James Cameron and all of the extremes he goes to bring these ideas to life. And he somehow still gets the fat cats to fucking pay for it. Like, that's probably like his biggest magic trick. Like, what? What? We'll come back to James Cameron later. He's going to be sprinkled all about this podcast. So relax. Not this podcast, this episode. Jesus Christ. Actually, I don't know. How many times are we going to see James Cameron? I don't know. But for this episode, he's going to be sprinkled all about. We've talked about James Cameron for a little bit. Now I want to talk about Kate Winslet and Leonardo DiCaprio. So Kate Winslet is Rose in the Titanic, the iconic Rose in Titanic, the young Rose in Titanic. She really, really, really fought for this role. She read the treatment, as they call it, which isn't really a script. It's more like, I think it's a script, but you also get like all the details of like shooting and stuff in it too. I don't know. Basically, it's a script, I guess. So she read the treatment and she was like, oh my God, this is amazing. So she was writing letters to James Cameron on the daily, and she even called him up and was like, why are you still looking for someone to play Rose? You found her. It's me. That's my horrible British accent. She even sent him a rose with a letter that read, from your Rose. And all that persistence got her an audition and a screen test. And fun fact, her screen test was with Matthew McConaughey. Yeah, they were considering him for Jack, or even the role of Cal, that disgusting little rich worm, right? So Leonardo DiCaprio, he originally didn't want this role because it seemed to be too commercial for him. And he is used to working on smaller films. Oh my God, he's just an indie actor. Come on, he's a man about the arts. But he was concerned that this blockbuster was going to lack quote unquote content, as they usually do. I don't know. Sometimes they have it. Sometimes they don't, you know? But then Leonardo DiCaprio talked to James Cameron, and James Cameron, like, you know, went a little bit deeper about Jack and about all this stuff. And then, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio started to, you know, entertain the idea of being Jack. But then Leo refused to read for a part at an audition. Like, I think Kate Winslet was there, too. Like, he refused to read. James Cameron said that Leonardo DiCaprio did have a little bit of a bad attitude, and James Cameron was like, no, I'm not going to give Jack a limp, a twitch, or like whatever interesting thing that you think that he needs. He's a romantic guy. He's a sweet guy. You're not, which made me laugh because I've been around young actors. I have been a young actor, and wowie, wow, wow, those creatures are really interesting. I don't know, maybe he just didn't want to be pigeonholed into like this whole like romance guy, but like it just really made me laugh that James Cameron was like, I'm not going to let you give him a limp or a tick or like some kind of thing. He's not going to be an addict. It's not going to. Yeah, so it just made me laugh. So Leo is like refusing to read for the part at this audition. And James Cameron is like, okay, well, if you're not going to read for the part, then you're not going to get the part. And then Leo was like, if I don't read for the part, I don't get the job. And apparently he like just came by the audition just to say hello. And I have heard of that. I have heard of that. He's not the first. He's not the last. I have heard like big time commercial even level actors that instead of like coming in and reading for the part, remember like Brando, they were like, he's going to be annoyed if we ask him to do that, whatever. Because apparently like these big stars, instead of like auditioning for the part, they will meet with the director, talk about the project, talk about the character, get to know each other a little bit, and then that's it. And then people do get cast that way. Not people like you and me, people like big fucking stars, okay? It's just kind of funny that he was like, oh, I'm not really into this whole commercial thing. It's just a little too big for me. I'm more of the guy who likes to work on the intimate works. But it's like at the same time, he's like, what? I have to read for the part? Like, like, of course you have to read for the part. Brando read for his screen test after he was tricked by Coppola. But still, you know, that's last week's news. But still, you got to read for the part if you want the part. So he read with Winslet and the rest is fictional portrayed history, right? And Winslet was like really sweet. She was like, oh my God, Jim, if you don't hire me, you must hire him. He's fantastic. So almost like complete opposite energy that Leo had about being a part of this project. But luckily, even though Kate was like really about being a part of this project and Leo was like a little reluctant about being a part of this project, they were really fast friends on set. And thank God they got along so well. Could you imagine having to go through like this grueling film shoot with someone you fucking hate? I'm sure it still would have looked great on camera. I don't know. I just love friendship. There are stories of Kate hyping Leo up to finish another day of challenging shooting in cold waters. And then Kate Winslet even shares stories of like Leo lending an ear to Kate whenever she needed a friend. And they're still sweet little friends to this day. And I am well aware that they were never an item, but me, oh my, that is what the public really wanted, isn't it? Especially after that ending in Titanic. Jesus. But they're like, nope, we're just good buds. We're just platonic friends. Right, we're just platonic buddies. And Leo said some really sweet things about Kate as well. He said, like, she made the shoot worthwhile. She made the project worthwhile. And it's just really nice to just see them mutually care about each other and just mutually have like this like really nice little friendship. I just love friendship, honestly. I crave it, to be honest. I love hearing about and seeing great friendships. I like listening to podcasts or watching YouTube videos of people and their friends, and then I feel like I'm also their friend. And you know, I think I'm saying too much here on my solo podcast, but whatever, we're all lonely as fuck, right? Anyway, Kate seems like a great friend. She seems like a person who would tell you, we're friends, after talking for an hour and like really mean it. Leo kind of seems like the guy who like wants you to be his best friend, like really, like he wants you to be his friend. But then he's also like in constant fear that you'll fall in love with him. So he downplays his friendship excitement as to not make things weird, rather than, you know, just being like straight up and being like, I don't want to date you. I just want to be friends. But love to see a friendship last so long and seem so genuine out here in Hollyweird. Okay, so we've covered the trinity of the Titanic film. James Cameron, Kate Winslet, Leonardo DiCaprio, right? I'm going to be talking about all three of them a lot. But before we talk about all three of them, let's go ahead and get into this chowder business. Who spiked the fucking chowder? Okay, so what the hell happened with the chowder? The chowder debacle of 1999. I am still seeing news articles about this to this day. Like, literally, I found out about the chowder situation while I was doing The Godfather, and I was like, what? What? Yeah. Give it to me. Give me all that information. I will admit, I am all over the place here, right? But before we keep going, I know we started talking about this and that and that and this. I just want to talk about the trippy chowder. Okay, so filming took place in Canada and Mexico. And Mexico, it's like off the coast of Mexico. So that's where like all the gigantic to scale replica of the Titanic was and like all the ship sinking footage was. Canada was the underwater vessels and a bunch of other things. And I think it was also the beginning scenes on that giant tanker out in the middle of the ocean. Leo and Kate, they were at the shoot in Mexico, not Canada, right? Because they did the boat stuff. I just know that they weren't there for the trippy chowder bit. They were excluded from this. So long story short, for big productions like this, you know, $200 million productions, there has to be catering available so the cast and crew can eat. And on the last day of filming in Nova Scotia, Canada, someone spiked the chowder with PCP, causing the entire crew and cast to trip balls, y'all. What is PCP? Well, nerd, I'll tell ya. Just kidding, you're not a nerd if you don't know what it is. The reputation I know about PCP is that it is not one of those drugs that you can like experiment with and then go back to work tomorrow. Or like it's like, I think it's one of those drugs where like if you're on PCP, it would make me think what happened to you in your life that you need to erase. And this is the eraser that you're picking. You know what I mean? It's pretty serious. It's pretty. And then to drug an entire chowder for one of the biggest cast and crews in like the business. How much PCP do you have? Anyway, so according to the National Institute of Health, PCP is phencyclidine, PCP, or even called angel dust, which I thought angel dust was cocaine. I was like, oh, I didn't know angel dust was PCP. So PCP is an infamous hallucinogenic sought for its ability to induce the illusion of euphoria, omnipotence, superhuman strength, and social and sexual prowess. And illusions of euphoria, omnipotence, superhuman strength, and social and sexual prowess are common illusions one or many may exhibit on a Hollywood project, but this sounded wild as so on the set, anyone who ate this cursed chowder was affected, including James Cameron, Bill Paxton, set painters, other cast and crew, and the cinematographer who was Chloe and Zoe Deschanel's dad, Caleb Deschanel. Okay? According to James Cameron, Caleb Deschanel started a conga line. Cameron made himself throw up because he was worried about possible seafood poisoning. It could have been clam chowder. Other people from the set state a different protein or a chowder variation. It was clam chowder. It was lobster chowder. It was mussels chowder. Either way, it was seafood. And everyone was hopped up on PCP. And before I heard about all of this happening on the Titanic set, I was like, is PCP that one news story? One news story. We have a lot of news stories out here in America about people being on drugs and doing the craziest of horrors. But so I Googled PCP news stories. And the first thing that popped up was, quote, I took PCP and ate my friend, end quote. Okay. Right? PCP is one of those drugs. Right? I don't know. I've never had it. I never will. I've seen people on it because they've told me, and it has made me very uneasy because there's nothing more nerve-wracking than someone telling you that they have taken a drug and that they no longer share your reality anymore and that they're in their own reality. And it sounds like that reality is a little wild and unpredictable. And the fact that PCP can give you like inhuman strength, count me out, okay? Count me out of that party. Not a good drug. Not a good one. God. And if I was there during the chowder incident of 1999, I would have made it all worse. I would have made it worse. I am not a fun person to drug. I would have lost my freaking mind and I would have checked myself into a hospital immediately or whatever I perceived to be a hospital. I'd just start treating James Cameron like a nurse. But, you know, I do. I get very panicked when I'm inebriated. I get very panicked on drugs and stuff, and I hate that. You know, I'm just not as cool as Caleb Deschanel, okay? I'm not. And you know what? Neither are you. So if you're thinking about doing PCP, don't, because it sounds like Deschanel was the only one that was, like, having fun. Of course, there was, like, other shit, too, but, I mean, like, it actually sounded like hell on earth for a lot of people. They are still trying to figure out who spiked the chowder. There are a lot of speculations going around. Some people speculate that James Cameron might have yelled one too many times at a crew member, and this was the retaliation. James Cameron has a theory that is also not too far off from that one. He thinks that it was a crew member that was fired due to the issues this crew member was having with the local caterer. So, Cameron believes that this disgruntled ex-crew member spiked the chowder to get the caterer fired. Other cast and crew members commented that people were indeed very, very high. They were flying down hallways in wheelchairs, rolling all over the floor. People were laughing, crying, throwing up, experiencing extreme anxiety. That would have been me. Some people were sent to the hospital, and everyone was eventually given liquid charcoal as a remedy, which is really good for like poisons and stuff. And liquid charcoal also makes for some goth vomit and some goth poops. So this all happened back in 1996, and I think they closed the case in 1999, but police reports on this incident may be made public in the middle of May 2024. Yeah, darling. These reports could be out now, and this might actually be old news by the time I post this episode. Or the Halifax Police Department is being a bunch of stinkers and refusing to make these reports public. Make them public and make them juicy. But that's it on the chowder thing. That was it. Everybody just got really freaking high. And then they went to Mexico and shot all the crazy ass shit. You know what? This did not happen around the huge hydraulic ship. At least this did not happen there. But now I'm like wondering if this happened on like that barge out in the middle of the fucking ocean. Oh, God. I'm getting nervous again. Let's move on. Now that we've talked about the anxiety-inducing chowder, let's talk about the rage-inducing door. Yeah, the damn door. Yeah, we're going to talk about it. So, of course, I missed the Titanic rage train that took over TikTok, like, when was it, last year? In the recent past, a lot of passionate Titanic fans? I don't know if they were fans because, like, they were so angry. But I think that anger comes from a place of love. Because we all wanted Jack to live. I think it was important and effective that he died. But I could have used a good ending after watching thousands of people die for almost 2 hours straight. So these fans took to TikTok to prove that there was indeed enough room for Rose and Jack on top of that floating debris, and thus Jack would have survived. Well, James Cameron being James Cameron was due for another public project that included revisiting and reviving Titanic the movie. No, seriously, this movie was released in theaters in the US at least 3 to 4 separate times, once in 2012 as a re-release, and again in 2017 for the 20th anniversary. And I'm also aware that it was released in 3D. I don't know if it was like separate from the last two I just said, but it was released in 3D. And who the hell would be into that? The film was only beautifully breathtaking and whimsical and lovely for about 1 out of the 3 hours. Like, I don't want to feel like I'm there. I also think it was released in 4D theaters as well. And if you've never been to a 4D theater, it's crazy. 4D theaters, that's where they use a lot of elements like fog, moving seats, air jets, and water, you know? Actually, you know, just to test myself, I think I would go to a Titanic 4D release. Go on an empty stomach, well-rested, hydrated, and with like an insulated wetsuit, and then go on a ride for about 3 hours. But anyway, the door. James Cameron did a 44-minute special with National Geographic where he used a lot of fucking money, got the Navy involved, and 2 super professional stunt people to recreate the door situation. Well, the Navy was to see if he got the sinking of the ship correct, and he did, except for maybe like a few angles were exaggerated, but I feel like he knew that, but he like spent a lot of money to prove that he knew that. I don't know. The door. So he takes 2 stunt people that are the same size and age as Jack and Rose, made an exact replica of the floating door slash debris, put them in a scientific pool that looked like it was located in Dr. Frankenfurter's lab, made the waters as cold as possible, but not Arctic cold, shoved some kind of monitor up their noses, and tested to see if there was indeed room for Jack and if he could survive. So Jack and Rose were wearing the same thing from the movie. Rose was in that lavender chiffon gown with Cal's big black like peacoat jacket on and the life vest. And Jack was in his billowy button-up and newsy-style pants. Even their shoes were correct. They ran test after test and brought test Jack to medical hypothermia at least twice, I think. I knew he was brought to hypothermia a lot. They tried everything from different positions of laying on the door, Rose cuddling Jack, you know, like she, like he would lay on the door and then she would like come and cuddle him, put her arm over him and stuff, which actually would have killed him faster because her weight was pushing his core into the water, causing his insides to freeze faster. They even took off Rose's life vest and put it under the door to like add buoyancy. But of course that didn't do Jack shit. But then Rose and Jack worked slowly together to climb onto the door at the same time. You know, like they swam like side by side to the door. Rose would inch on, then Jack would inch on. They would inch and scooch until they were both on the door, but a majority of their lower half was in the water, which is better than having your core in the water because that's where all your guts and shit are. Yeah, so what? Your legs freeze off. At least it's not like your organs and stuff. You don't need your legs to live. They help, but you know. So imagine them sitting on their sides, right? With their arms in like a push-up position. Kind of like when a Disney princess is running. Like, right, she's running from, she's like chasing something. Come back. And she's running as fast as she can. But then she trips and falls. And of course she doesn't land on her pretty face because her arms hit the ground like first, keeping her pretty face and torso off the ground. You know? Does that make sense? That's literally the position they were in. Fallen princess. So Jack and Rose are in that fallen princess position, and then Rose gives Jack her life vest. Even though it's soaked, it will help insulate Jack's core. And Rose has on that floor-length gown and a rich guy's peacoat. So she could spare that layer. So at this point, Test Jack is trembling violently to the point to where I was like, do stunt people do this? Is this within the stunt person's realm, is to push their body to limits of extreme hypothermia? I guess so. They both consented to it. So Test Jack is in full body tremors. Like he is like shaking. Test Jack was literally and medically freezing. Okay. But the full body tremors mixed with his torso being insulated and out of the water kept his body from declining rapidly compared to his body being in the water. And he would have survived if they did this. So yes, Jack could have survived. He could have, as proved by Jimmy Cam Cam himself. Let the riots begin. Cameron says that if he were to rewrite the script again, he would have written for a smaller door. Sorry, Jack. This test that Cameron conducted is actually on YouTube. So you can go see the whole thing for yourself. I think it's called like Titanic, 25 years later with James Cameron on National Geographic. You'll find it. And also within this like little special of his, he they give you a preview of what you're about to see. As like, oh, coming up on the 25-year reunion with James Cameron and blah, 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 blah. And then they're like showing clips from the special that you're about to see. And it, like, they even included like little clips of James Cameron getting pissy and like rolling his eyes at people looking at them and storming off. I don't know, made me chuckle. So yes, I knew Jack was going to die, but I was still sad, dude. And I think that's the point, right? I think we were supposed to be sad at that. We are supposed to be sad. The Titanic wreck is devastating. And James Cameron really did want to bum out the audience and create that tragic feeling in our own ice-cold cores. Jack represented all the lives lost, right? He made us mourn a little bit. And then, you know, we got really angry because this movie was pitched as like an epic historical romance. But, you know, good job to everybody who created this massive uproar about the door. If not, James Cameron would have never spent a lot of money proving himself wrong. So thank you for that. Let's give a round of applause for everybody. Oh, and there's also another star of this Titanic show, and that's the special effects. And holy frickin' smokes, the special effects on this movie? I won't spend too much time on it because I kind of want you to look it up if you're interested. Mainly because it's hard to imagine what a 17 million gallon tank looks like and what it looks like to lower an entire set into a tank and all that good stuff. And this is a podcast. I don't really have any visuals ready for you at this time, and I'm only existing in podcast mode audibly, but I still want to talk about it because I love movie magic, and James Cameron is not afraid to be like really ambitious. So let's start with the ship. So the ship, Titanic herself. And why do we call cars and boats ladies? What is that about? I'm sure the patriarchy is to blame. But when I see guys from the Titanic talk about the ship as women, I saw love in their eyes, admiration, respect. I don't really see those things too often when men talk about actual human women, especially the large, strong, and powerful women. I don't know. I'm scared to look into it. I'm afraid I'll get a brain bleed. Anyway, the Titanic in the movie, they made a 2-scale replica. One side of the ship was completed top to bottom, and I think the other side might have been a bit more hollow and unfinished because they only needed to shoot the ship on one side. They acquired the actual blueprints from the original build of the Titanic and were able to recreate the interiors to match what was found on that creepy deep dive footage Cameron took. God, and the poop deck, which is the back of the ship. Let's get it out of our system. I said poop. Why is it called the poop deck? It comes from the French term stern, la poupe. So technically in English, it's the stern deck, but we love saying poop, so it remained the poop deck. Anyway, the poop deck, the back end of the ship that went vertical was real. They had that thing on hydraulics. Leo and Kate were in harnesses while the poop deck went vertical. They were actually up there. That is fucking insane. Oh my God, and that would scare me so much. How high is that? How high is that in the air? It's like being on top of a skyscraper. Oh my God. I would be terrified. I'd be so scared. I'd be like, get a stunt person in here. Like, what are we doing? But, oh, speaking of stunt people, there were stunt people. Thank fucking God. Thank God for stunt people. Jesus Christ. There were stunt people that actually were sliding down the hydraulic deck, and they were like bouncing off of the structures on the deck. And then the ones that are jumping off the ship, they were actually jumping off the ship. They had like these long bungee cords that caught them right at the nick of time, and they would bounce back into the air after almost hitting like the rudder or the ground or the water or whatever. And then there were also giant airbags for stunt people who didn't have bungee cords and could safely just like jump from the ship and land on the airbag. God. Luckily, somehow, no one died on set. Nobody died. Even after the clam chowder incident, we got a poop deck going vertical. Like, nobody died. I cannot believe that. There were a lot of broken bones. So, like, you know, James Cameron couldn't keep doing take after take after take like he really wanted to all the time. Kate Winslet almost drowned a lot, but no one died. But Kate Winslet almost drowned a lot. She probably had one of the most dangerous roles to have. So her almost drowning, it's not because of her swimming skills, which she did train. She trained to be on this physically demanding set like this. She had no idea what she was in for, but she did do some physical training. But she almost drowned because all of the clothes she was wearing, all of the clothing that she wore was gorgeous. It was beautiful, but it was dangerous. Whether it was flowy or covered in beads, if it's covered in beads, then it's super slippery and clanky and all this stuff. If it's super flowy, then it gets tangled in a lot of shit. But when the ship was going down, right, she was in a multi-layered floor-length lavender chiffon gown during the wreck, okay? And underwater, chiffon is a gorgeous material to photograph because it's light and flowy, and you can use yards and yards of it to look like you are being swallowed up by this ethereal fabric underwater. But during an action disaster movie where you are running full speed with water up to your waist or your neck, it can fucking kill you. So Kate said that her heels kept getting tangled in the fabric, right? Like, especially when she was underwater. Like, underwater, her feet kept getting all tangled up in the fabric. Her shoes also got stuck in that aggravating gate scene. Remember? She, like, frees Leo from the handcuffs, and they're running through all this fucking water. They're sloshing around, fucking fighting for their lives. They're screaming. The lights are flashing. There's fucking sparks everywhere. And they run up to... They run up the stairs, which is the only exit they had because the rest of the exits were fucking flooded and just underwater already. Like, so they're at this gate and they're like, fuck, someone help us, someone help us. My God. And then that dumb crew member is like running by them and they're like, wait, please come help us. And he's like halfway up the stairs looking all scared and shit. And they're like, please come help us. Come open the door. And he's like, I can't. They're like, please come help us. Open the gate. And then the crew member like comes back down the stairs and then he reaches in his pocket for the keys. He had the goddamn keys. He had the fucking keys. So what is he over here being like? Oh, I can't. Go fucking unlock the gate. You got the keys. Unlock the gate. He goes to unlock the gate. The water is rising and rising and rising. It's like literally up to like Leo and Kate's like shoulders at this point. And then the fucking crew member drops the keys in the water. So then Kate and Leo have to like go underwater to try to get the keys. Like during that scene, her feet were getting stuck and the water was like at her shoulders or at her neck or even at her waist. Honestly, you could drown like that. Like, so she was getting stuck in the gate, but luckily, because she was getting tangled up and she was getting stuck in the gate and she was almost trapped under the water a few times. Luckily, there were divers under the water that assisted in these times and helped her get free. I love safety, even though that's kind of towing the line a little bit. But like they did have divers under there to keep her from totally drowning. Oh my God. But I really do appreciate all of the stunt people. I appreciate all of the safety precautions on set because oh my God. God, this movie, like this entire movie set could have been a tragedy all in its own, you know? Oh, sorry. Can we talk? Yeah, I'm glad everyone's fine. But can we talk about the really bad CGI in the beginning? Like we're still on the special effects topic. And I just really want to talk about the really bad CGI at the beginning, because what the fuck was that? I know this was from the 90s and everything. So, you know, I'm giving grace. But what in the roller coaster tycoon was that? So the scene I'm talking about is the scene where it looks like they're going for an aerial shot of the ship, right? Where the camera shows the front and the sides of the ship and it's all like CGI. Because remember, I told you the ship was not completed in real life. Any full shots of the ship side to side are fakey wakey. So the scene I'm talking about is where it looks like they're going for this aerial shot of the ship, where the camera shows the front and sides of the ship. So you can see people walking on separate levels in period attire, and then you see the captain's deck. And when you get to the captain's deck, everyone is walking like they're in Grand Theft Auto. It's really something else. So if you're one of those people that can watch this movie over and over again, keep your peepers out for that quick, blocky fiasco. It really is silly. Enough shitting on the movie. I would like to talk about some of my favorite parts. Okay. There was a lot that I did like about the movie. One, the costuming. Hello, I've been talking about it this whole time, mainly for Rose, because Jesus Christ, her clothing was gorgeous. Like when Rose went to go like off herself on the poop deck, she was wearing that red wine colored gown with like vintage black beading overlay, which was slippery. And when she was like stepping on the railings and stuff in that scene, she actually was like slipping and shit. Oh, God. Or the dress she wears while, like when, like, Jack, like, sees her for the first time and she has, like, that white lace transparent sleeve and, like, a really pretty green dress. Like, no wonder Jack falls in love with her instantly. Hello. Oh, and I really got a kick out of watching Sweaty Rose impress the partygoers under the deck by levitating onto her tippy toes. Oof, that was a hoot. Oh, and when Rose went to save Jack and she's like running through the flooded halls of the lower deck, she asked for help and everyone was like, listen, lady, the ship is sinking, don't you know? And she grabs an axe and the water is like up to her neck and her head is near the ceiling with like all those exposed pipes. So she takes the axe in one hand and then does like one-handed like monkey bars across the exposed pipe and then finds Jack and like axes him loose. It was great. Oh, I was also happy they got sloppy in the jalopy. Like at least y'all scored before sinking. I'm sure that's like at least one less regret Rose has to live with. Dude, and Kathy Bates? I didn't know she was in this one. I love Kathy Bates. Seeing her in something just makes me happy, and then I sit back a little bit because I know I'm going to love her character for whatever reason. And Kathy Bates' character, Margaret Molly Brown, was a real person, y'all. And Miss Molly Brown really did stand up on that lifeboat and say, what are we doing? We have to go back, you know? Those people need our help. And it seems like Molly Brown and the other women aboard actually ended up taking over that lifeboat and went back for a few more survivors. She even got herself a nickname, the Unsinkable Molly Brown. Get it? Because that was the Titanic's most frequently used adjective. Remember that? It's unsinkable. We don't need that many lifeboats because it's unsinkable. Fuck's sake. Oh, and while we're at it, as far as the other historical figures go, not all of them were so accurate. For example, William Murdoch. In the movie, he was the officer in charge of the bridge, and he's the guy that accidentally shoots that one guy, and then he turned the gun on himself, you know? Yeah, his family was pretty upset at that portrayal, because Murdoch historically was responsible for filling and deploying a majority of the lifeboats on the ship, making him a hero and a local legend in Dalbeattie, Scotland. The vice president of Fox, one of the production companies that funded this film, went to Scotland and personally apologized. Cowboy, I'm talking about history. Sorry, he's very bossy when he wakes up from his naps. He's mad because I won't let him in here. Oh, God. Anyway, so Murdoch, he's historically responsible for filling and deploying a majority of the lifeboats on the ship, making him a hero. And oh yeah, then the vice president of Fox went to Scotland to personally apologize to the family. And he also gave a huge donation to the Dalbeattie High School to help fund the William Murdoch Memorial Prize. James Cameron also apologized in the commentary on the DVD. Okay. Oh God. Another favorite part of mine is Celine Dion singing My Heart Will Go On. Hell yes. That was almost never a thing. The composer of the film, James Horner, first for composing the film, Cameron actually went to Enya and was like, can you do this? And she's like, no, I cannot. And so then he goes to James Horner and James Horner scored the film. James Horner, he wrote the song in private, right? And he had to wait until James Cameron was in a good mood to pitch it. Cameron was against having lyrical music in the film to prevent the movie from seeming too commercial, which is a big faux pas in the 90s, apparently. And it's like too commercial. $200 million, man. Can y'all stop acting like you're not commercial when you are? Just own it. Sometimes we need a good commercial. I don't know. Sometimes we need a commercial movie. Sometimes we just need a movie to go to the movies, okay? Jesus. But anyway, and this movie made James disgustingly rich. Like, I can't even add up all the money that it made because I don't think I'm going to be able to comprehend how much money that is. Anyway, James allowed the song, and now we have Celine Dion, right? That was our treat for making it through that movie. Well, that's all that I liked about the movie. Now we're going to talk about some critical hatred. Now that we have spoken of lovely friendship and what is a James Cameron, Chowder, and Celine Dion, I want to read you some brutal reviews from this movie from IMDb.com. And some of these reviews were posted in the 90s. Yep, that's right. We're getting there, folks. We have decades worth of shit online now. Shit you post on the internet will stay around for other generations to read and put on their podcasts. Okay? Be careful out there. I heard of the Titanic all my life. I never heard about any negative reviews and such. I thought everybody was happy with it and loved it. Silly, silly me. A lot of people really, really, really hated it. Before the movie even came out, word got around that this movie had a $200 million budget, a budget so big that it had to be split between two powerhouse Hollywood production studios, Fox and, can you guess, Paramount. Like, wow. A few years earlier, y'all were giving Brando, Puzo, and Coppola a hard time over what seemed to be chump change for you. But then you go halvesies on a $2 billion movie where the concept is Romeo and Juliet on the Titanic. But whatever. They spit out the cash and the public caught wind. Not only was the budget alarming, people didn't know what to expect from a huge budget with no huge stars. So people were ready to hate this movie, basically. Then you have the historians, the other people obsessed with shipwrecks and the Titanic. There was a lot of uproar about how so many things about the ship, historical events, and figures were just plain wrong. And of course, you have the people that hated the fact that Jack did not survive. And then there was an opposite group that hated the love story altogether, saying that the writing was weak and all Jack and Rose did was say, "I love you," and then scream each other's names over and over and over again until Jack died. Let's read these ripe reviews, shall we? Let's start with fancy people. So, this isn't on IMDb. This is like fancy critics and stuff. So, first up, we have Jacques Rivette. He had some strange-ass things to say. Jacques is a French New Wave filmmaker and a critic, and I know nothing about him except for these following statements. He said that the Titanic was garbage and that our lovely Kate Winslet was, quote, unwatchable, the most slovenly girl to appear on screen in a long, long time. He called her messy and dirty. What the fuck? No, she glowed. She was literally glowing in that movie, you dumb fuck. Anyway, so that's fucked up. Especially since, like, Winslet gave her whole self to this fucking movie. With all the action and the emotional shit, and she posed nude, dude. And you're over here calling her gross and messy. She was nude. You're lucky to have been given such a sight, Mr. Rivette. And she was beautiful. And she still is. Then we have another fancy historian, Richard Davenport Hines, who said, Cameron's film diabolized rich Americans and educated English, anathematizing their emotional restraint, good tailoring, punctilious manners, and grammatical training, while it made romantic heroes of the poor Irish and unlettered. Yeah, those were real words used in an attempt at communicating. This person is hired to review stuff. I think. No. They're a historian. This person was asked their opinion, like, what do you want the public to know about this movie? And he said all that. And it's like, what were those words? If you were trying to communicate with us and get a point across, you have failed. Also, is that a bad review? Isn't that the truth in life? Let's just break down this vernacular. Diabolized. Think diabolical. Anathematizing. Cursed or condemn. Punctilious. Great detail. Correct behavior. Unlettered, uneducated, and illiterate. So it made the rich Americans look evil, and also the educated English looked evil. It condemned their emotional restraint, good tailoring, and their correct behavior and grammatical training. And then it made heroes of the poor Irish and the illiterate. Like, yeah, that's real, dude. That's like the reality. So, like, I don't know if that was like a bad review or if he's just being straight up. I don't know. Maybe he's mad because that was like too real in this movie of fiction. No, that was pretentious vernacular. It sounds like his rich boy feelings got hurt with the truth. And then it's also weird that he pointed out that Irish. Like, I'm sure there were Irish accents on there. There were quite a few accents going around in this movie. But Irish isn't something that, like, stuck out to me. It's always lovely to hear an Irish accent. I don't know. It's just really weird that this guy pointed out the Irish. Just, like, leave them alone, dude. They've been through a lot. Weird ass. Punctilious weird ass. I'm using the word incorrectly to prove a point, and the phonetics of that word make it hard for a dum-dum like me to take it seriously.
Punctilious. Punctilious. Punctilious! Get down from that tree!
That's what it sounds like a Victorian child. Okay, let's get some from the 90s IMDb archive. Oh, here's one. Oh, it's from 2006. Whatever. Still a long time ago. It reads... The title for this one is called P.U. And it reads, "What a stinker! I know that the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences is a private club, and only members can vote for Oscars. We, the viewing public, buy our tickets and have our opinions. I have watched the Oscars show on TV since they first let us in on their big night. It is fun to watch the show and hope for your favorites, but it's not a People's Choice Award show. I have been disappointed many times and happy many times with the winners of the coveted prize, but never so disappointed and shocked at the winning of 11 Oscars for Titanic. One Oscar for special effects, maybe, but the other 10? Ridiculous! The blue heart? Yikes! I can't understand how anyone other than girls between the ages of 10 and 12 could have liked this awful movie!" And that review comes from the always credible IMDb account of Grammykins, another early millennium gem from user Newski the Hippie. This one is called, "I cried because I paid." I trimmed it down a bit because it was really fucking long. They said, "This movie is bad from beginning to end. It's not just that I hate movies that are hyped. This movie is just hard to watch. I want romance. Not people saying I love you over and over again. I want a real couple. Not a couple of star-crossed lovers pulled out of the average crappy teen drama. And I want..." Maybe this is too much. "To feel for the people who died on the Titanic, not cheer when the ship finally goes down." End quote. Who? That didn't stress you out, Newski the Hippie? That didn't stress you out? Oh, okay. I actually found one from the 90s. This one's from 98, from Slade Man. Oh my goodness. Okay. This one is called "Mindless Tripe, comma, Garbage. This film is an insult to the intelligence of the common garden slug. The romance between DiCaprio and Winslet is completely unbelievable, with no real chemistry between the two. The script is complete garbage, crafted solely in the belief that the public is as idiotic as the creator of this film. Though the sinking of the ship is well-crafted and visually stunning, there is no pity to be felt for the cardboard characters that inhabit this film. The 3 hours or so spent watching this horrible film could be more constructively used watching paint dry. The plot is slipshod and centered not on the tremendous agony and suffering of those souls lost on Titanic, but on the self-centered interests of a girl leaving behind her obligation to her family for a 3-day fling with an artist, which is consummated in the back of a car." Listen here, Slade Man. You do it. You marry that guy then. You throw your life away. You go marry him, okay? Fuck. She was living her life. What, you wanted her to marry him? The fuck is wrong with you? Anyway, he goes on to be like, "My hope is that this film is somehow exposed to the people as the massive dung heap that it is. I suggest people who like this inane, insulting piece of garbage view a film of real emotional power that was also crafted from historical events from the 1910s, comma, All Quiet on the Western Front. I also recommend those who liked this film view the reviews it got from Kenneth Turan of the Los Angeles Times, who exposes the film's huge weak spots and lack of heart." Slade Man, you're comparing a disaster movie romance to an anti-war film that made Hitler upset. don't know what the fuck you were expecting, babe. And I will let you know that the new All Quiet on the Western Front is a masterpiece. And I highly recommend watching it. I really do. And I could watch that one again. And that one was intense. But it is so good. I hate war. Anyway, I could go on more about that. I won't, because fuck this guy for talking about Rose like that. He has obviously never had a marriage be weaponized against him. What is she supposed to do? Throw her fucking life away for a lifetime of abuse and turmoil? And did he forget that Cal ended it all for himself? Like ended it because he lost all of his money in the stock market? She would have missed out on the romance of a lifetime just to be fucked over in the end. And also, Cal probably would have killed her. He probably would have pushed her overboard or something. Something. But I'll end this review segment with a breath of fresh air. Benjamin Wilcock from DVDArchive.com had his own response to this passionate parade of backlash. He says, quote, "What really irks me are those who make nasty stabs at those who do love it. I obviously don't have anything against those who dislike Titanic, but those few who make you feel small and pathetic for doing so, and they do exist, trust me, are way beyond my understanding and sympathy." End quote. Beyond my understanding and sympathy. And I love that. How do I feel about it? Well, it's exhausting, tragic, beautiful. And at the end, you get a prize. Like I said, the prize is Celine Dion. And no, I didn't watch this movie again. And this is the first movie in my show where I don't have multiple rewatches or even a second rewatch. It's long and stressful. Just like this election year. My fucking God. RFK Jr. is getting eaten up by brain worms. Biden, Trump, fuck. Anyway, sorry to bring it down. Anyway, let's pick up our spirits by seeing if y'all think Rose actually died in the end. So speaking of the ending, do y'all think Rose died and like went to Titanic heaven? James Cameron was like, "I leave it up to interpretation." But I think she died. For sure. She threw that, and she was like over 100 years old, and she threw that expensive necklace into the ocean because fuck capitalism. And then she died in her old ass age in a warm bed above the dead remains of her loved ones, just like she promised Jack. Oh my God. All right. So that's it for me today, everybody. And yeah, I did record a big chunk of this episode before Kamala Harris came onto the field. But still, this is a crazy election year. So I hope you're taking care of yourself. I hope you're drinking water. And I hope you're watching movies that don't make your hair fall out. Well, you have, because if you're here, you've watched The Titanic. So next week, we are going to be continuing this little theme of cuffing season, and we will be moving on to a movie that I have been wanting to see for a very, very long time. Basically because it's super moody. It's all over my For You page. I just keep seeing clips and clips and clips of it, and like I don't understand what the movie is about 100%. I just know it looks really cool. In the Mood for Love. Yep, we're watching In the Mood for Love next week. Mm-hmm, we sure are. And if you would like to watch In the Mood for Love, you can stream it on Max. Looks like it's also available on YouTube, Amazon Prime, YouTube TV. And then it looks like you can start renting it on Google Play, Apple TV, and Fandango. It is totally worth the rent if you need to rent it. It's like, woo! It's very moody, it's very dramatic, it's very deep, very layered, very much an insane opposite from the Titanic. Oh, I cannot wait to talk about it. I can't wait to literally watch it, and it's gonna be such a good time. So I will see you then. I will see you next Monday when we cover In the Mood for Love. And if you haven't already, you can also follow me on my socials where I do really dumb stuff, lucky.damn.day on TikTok and Instagram, and I'm setting up my YouTube channel soon. Whoa, what am I gonna do with that? I don't know. Anyway, I'll see you next week. Love you very much. Drink that water. I don't know, and be nice to people. Bye.